Watch how I soar.
Well, I couldn't very well watch the show from up there now, could I, little girl?
Up until now, you've simply sat in the shadows, watching others live out their lives.
I'll be watching you!
No, I mean, which one do you want to watch first?
Let's watch with Formal Shark.
Welcome, everyone, to this month's edition of Let's Watch with Formal Shark. This month, we've been watching the movie I, Daniel Blake.
Good morning, Mr. Blake. I'm appointed to carry out assessments for employment and support allowance. Can you walk more than 50 metres?
Yes.
Can you raise either arm as if to put something in your top pocket?
Yes. Can I ask you a question? Are you medically qualified?
So, I, Daniel Blake is the 2016 movie, directed by Ken Loach. Bit of a spiel from IMDb, a middle-aged carpenter who requires state welfare after suffering a heart attack is joined by a single mother in a similar scenario. So this is a northeast England-based movie, so it's pretty close to where we all hail from. And it was a recommendation from Phil, yeah, who I've got with us on the podcast this month, and also Bob.
Hello.
So we've got the full Formal Shark Let's Drink family on the show.
It's not drinking tonight.
With no drink. Oh, what a shame. So Phil, what, well, I suppose two things. What drew you to this movie and made you decide to recommend it? And on your kind of second viewing, what do you think?
That's my third viewing, actually.
Oh, third viewing, yeah. Even. Oh, well,
I got free. We got free tickets before it came out on some website. Show Films, I think. They occasionally give you like free tickets.
Show Film First.
Yeah. So we got that. We'd heard about it in sort of the circles on like the Guardian website and stuff, because it's that sort of film. And yeah, went to see it, and sort of such a film to make us think that I dragged Bob along a couple of weeks later to see it, because I had quite a lot to talk about towards them.
Yeah.
And that was, and then when we started this, I knew we had to watch it as soon as it came out, and it only came out on DVD a couple of weeks ago.
All right. Good, Phil. Yeah. So, Bob, you've seen this before, or was this your first time?
So this was my second time.
Right.
I watched it once with Phil in the cinema, and came out in more or less floods of tears and a lot of what on earth. It's quite a striking film.
It definitely is, eh? I mean, it does sort of bring a few things home, doesn't it?
I think it's one of the first films I've watched and come out angry.
Angry at what in particular?
Well, at the system, and that these people have had to go through that, and knowing that other people, and then sort of a mix of emotions through the entire day of when I first seen it.
Yeah.
And then I was straight on sort of researching things and looking up.
I think it's kind of bleak a little bit in the way it does it as well. You sort of, it's kind of a bit of a comedy at points.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the way it starts especially, and then even all the way through, you know, it kind of feels lighthearted and comedic in quite a few parts, and then you're really struck with, you know, the whole prospect, like the kind of end result of everything.
But isn't that not life? When you're going through something bad, you always laugh at or you try and take the mick and things like that. Or something I do whenever I've dealt with rubbish.
I mean, to me, the key bits the film's highlights is just the ridiculousness of systems. It's not just in terms of job seekers and welfare. Everything is like, well, you can't do this until, you know, you've done step one and then step two. But actually, if you don't fit in the little boxes for step one and step two, you don't get anywhere. And it really, you know, it highlights the problems with the UK's welfare system. But possibly people could take points away from that from other places. Because I'm sure we've all sat there for hours on end, on hold, listening to crap music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think we've all done that.
Like, another point that I was sort of reading was this has gone all through Europe and stuff and done, like, all the film festivals.
Yeah.
And one of the things I kept saying was from other countries, people were coming up and saying, no, this is our system. This is the same as us. So it's not just a UK problem. It's something throughout Europe and beyond that people...
Well, I think that's right. I think that's, you know, Adam's point, isn't it? It's any kind of system. As soon as you put a process or a system that is, you know, it's kind of, it's mechanical in its nature, isn't it? So it's not very personable, it's not people.
There's no relate. Fluidity yeah. in yeah. kind of.
So everything, you know, is very much on the point. And I think that you know, that woman who works in the Job Seekers Centre that we see a couple of times, you know, and she's very like processing. She's just following her job. She's doing exactly what it says, point to point to point to point, you know, and following that system, you know. And then you've got the flip side. You've got that other woman who's trying to like deviate slightly and, you know, bring a bit more warmth to it, or have like a slightly adaptive approach and things, and then you just can't. It just doesn't work.
Like for especially sort of you, Phil, it's very much in your films. I think it's filmed in a very interesting way.
Mm.
The script, they're only ever given that day's bit of the script.
Ah,
so
right.
They do not know that full story.
So one of the things, and just to jump in, but yeah, that's one of the things I was kind of picking up all the way through, was I felt, and that maybe explains it a bit, the fact that we're only given a small amount of the script, but I even felt like some of the bits were like shot in the real place.
They are. Or what have you,
like more ad lib and stuff.
So the food bank.
I felt very much that was, they just went along there one day and decided to shoot some film.
Yeah, well,
and said to the staff there, we're going to shoot a film and you're in it.
Yeah, so.
Almost. That's
so
what it felt like.
So that was all food bank staff there. The actor that played Daniel Blake, I think he's called John, I think.
He's Dave Johns.
Oh, Dave Johns.
There. Dave Johns. Yeah, David
he
Johns.
Didn't know exactly what was going to happen. He knew some of the words, but he didn't know that she was going to do the whole eating of the food. So he didn't know that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So even that reaction's quite real.
I felt there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on in the movie where it felt like, you know, it could have been like an ad lib and they're just going, well, here's the situation, we're not really kind of giving you a full script, and you just, you know, because a lot of the language felt very like natural and non-scripted in a way, you know.
And it was the same with the in the shop where she does the shoplifting.
Oh yeah,
they said they were just like in between people actually shopping, so they'd have to like stop the take, somebody went to get like the bread and then started again.
So it wasn't like we're clearing out your store for the day and we're going to shoot this movie and bring like all these extras and da da da. It was just
in like the library and things like that. So there's a lot of that involved in it.
Real people and just turn up and shoot.
Yeah, a lot of sort of Ken Loach's style, I think.
Yeah, because you almost have a documentary feel then, don't you?
Yeah.
To it, and there's you're just capturing a bit more of a natural moment. It was quite good. Like. So what about some of the kind of characters and other characters and plot threads and stuff like that? I mean, obviously we followed Dan through all of his situation. What about the woman and the kids from London? What did you feel of that situation?
I think it showed hopelessness again, and but it showed sort of like that love for your children, and you'll do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you're just stuck in a situation that you can't get out of, even though that you want to get out of it and you're hard working.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as society would probably look down on somebody like that if we've seen them in the street.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The other thing that sort of I got you was, because of her life decisions, the children are suffering.
Yeah.
So they, throughout their life, are going to have the knock-on effects can't have the childhood that they should have.
It highlights that children pick up on situations more than what you probably expect. I mean, you hear it over and over, and it's very highlighted. Those kids knew things weren't quite right.
Yeah.
And knew they were going through problems, and were trying to put on the same brave face that she was. And I think she was trying to protect them from that. But maybe if you realise your kids know it, you can work better as a family unit, knowing you're going through the hardships, rather than trying to hide it from them, because kids are quite resilient.
Mm-hmm.
Which
you obviously had with the older, the daughter, they seemed to have, you know, she had a bit of resilience and understood what was going on. But yeah, the younger one was a little bit more closed, but then you realised that actually just needed a bit more, maybe father figure, I suppose. You started getting that in Dan and things like that. But it was an interesting. I must admit, I think when the character was like first introduced, I sort of didn't click with her to start with. You know, I felt like very much like she was in a situation of her own making in a way. You know, I think it was like, you know, with the kids like throwing a trolley down a street and all that, and you just think, well, why, you know, this is all happening, are you in control and all? But I think it did a good enough job of building up on that.
It's the small pieces of information to them, know her story suddenly mm-hmm. changes your perception.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, it reflects us as a society, that mm-hmm. we're quick to judge people before we know the full story. And it is quite poignant, because I had a similar viewpoint the first time. I thought, well, you know, don't let your kid be a little shit.
Yeah.
But she's not. He's been stuck in a room, and you know, if you were stuck in a room and that was all you lived in, you'd go stir crazy. And now he's free.
And he's out in the outside world.
Can have fun literally, and be a kid. I mean, we've all been, you know, little shits at times.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things, going back to the food bank one, was the sanitary towels and not having them. And now since that's there's now campaigns for that to be one of the things that people donate to.
As a sort of result from this movie.
Yeah, so there's now been a
It's interesting when she even states, because she states, doesn't she, like, oh, people don't donate them very often. Yeah. It's sort of interesting the type of things that people think to donate to a food bank, and then you don't sort of think about some of those other essentials, I guess, you know, for...
And the other thing is that food banks need food. So
definitely.
If it's affected you, it's donate to a food bank. If there's one in your supermarket, what's 30 pence for some pasta or something to throw in?
Yeah.
Or go to the, like, Trussell Trust website and donate £10 or something, because as well as they actually need food, they need the facilities to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the government don't give money for a food bank. That's from...
No, from is, us. It's just all donation. It's all, you know, public.
I would also say, take a tweet and at the Conservative government saying, why am I having to donate this? Because it's something that we shouldn't have to be doing as people. I shouldn't have to give away me 30 pence. I should be able to spend that on what I want, not have to do it because of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty, you know, pretty stark seeing a lot of all of that. I think all of that sort of food bank scene was definitely an interesting scene. I found that really quite interesting. I've never really, you know, seen that at its conclusion. You know, you see the food donations in supermarkets and things like that, and you don't kind of see, you know, the food bank and, you know, the line out the door. And
food bank, according to the Trussell Trust, food bank usage is going up 19% year on year.
Right.
It's just going up more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, definitely.
Worrying?
I mean, as we were discussing before we started recording, was, you know, most normal people are not that far away from a similar situation. You know, one of the other viewers was saying, you know, we're about 3 months away from being homeless, because most people don't have that much savings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think this is worlds apart from what you are, think about how much money you've got, because if you don't have a job and the job centre turns around and goes, well, you know, tough.
Yeah.
What happens, you know?
Yeah, no, that's it. It's very true, yeah. If they're going to refuse you benefit for whatever reason, then how long could you live without it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Another thing, that's it. There's hard-working people that fall on bad times and can't work, and I know quite a few of them sort of within my family that, you know, one of them went to work with a broken leg. And's now working past retirement, so a hard worker. But when she needed to be off for a while, she was deemed fit for work.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, so it's hard working people that have paid the money all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
And like the beginning of the film, he goes through his assessment. Those were the actual assessment questions. I know people that have gone through.
Yeah, so all the bit they're doing the opening titles there, where it's just the titles on black and going through all those questions.
So those assessment questions are the actual ones, and basically it's if you can, you know, move and you're very independent as a person, those assessments say you can work. Even you know, as Daniel had been in the film, had a heart attack.
Yeah,
and doctors said, well, you can't work.
Yeah,
those are not taken into aspect into consideration. And yet we've got these healthcare professionals which are just following the script. And again, it's this script thing of, well, these don't fit in the box and they can't work. Why?
Mm-hmm. And on average, 90 people a month are died after being just recently declared fit for work.
Right.
And that's the statistic I've got me for.
Fact! Yeah. As I would say, yeah.
So it's quite stark, really.
Yeah. So I mean, kind of think. So Let's pull a few other bits from the film as well, because one of the themes that I thought was quite good that kept reoccurring all the way through was the things around technology and the use of technology and stuff. Obviously, you had Daniel struggling, you know, as somebody who'd never used computers and things like that, so trying to struggle and you know, move with technology in a system that is not only not personable or related to people, you know, in a sort of sense, but is totally digital, you know, so you know, couldn't follow that. What did you sort of pick up on or think about the kind of technology and alienation it was forming?
I mean, we're a podcast, we've got to say we love technology.
No, but it's getting more and more, you're alienating yourself from society if you're not part of mm-hmm. of that technology. And when you just think if somebody retweets away from Facebook,
yeah,
they stop getting invited to things.
Yeah,
as easy.
Yeah,
and things like that. So just simple things like that. You sort of
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're putting them. And obviously, then if you're then in a situation where you've got to deal with it to get a job, you can't do your CV.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah. when you think about it, it's actually quite a hard thing to do. If I was just to put it in front of you and you'd never seen Word before.
Yeah. I mean, what I quite liked was how they related to, you know, the whole thing wasn't like, oh, this is just, you know, a totally technical, inept guy.
Yeah.
It was just, I think that it really showed how changing and advancing technology is all the time, because I loved the scene where they did the tape, the cassette thing.
Yeah.
And it related to the fact, like, well, I, you know, this is the technology of my time, necessarily, yeah. you know, and the kid had no idea. She was completely dumbfounded, you know,
and,
you know, it
and,
just
yeah, and
could,
he was
did
teaching
not compute.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
yeah.
it is, you know, maybe we need, you know, paper forms. You know, it's, mm-hmm. it's the show. You know, it's a press button on print.
Yeah,
and it's there. Why are we making that hard for somebody if it's just press print? I know we're meant to be saving paper in the trees, but you know, make it simple for people.
So I think that's it, yeah, what we're talking, like, a really screwed up system, you know, having, you know, some things are digital, some things are analogue, it's, you know, getting a form, printing it out, filling it in, going out, you know, it's just all over the place, really, and that's going back to your point, I suppose, of the system's just broken, isn't it, you know, it's not in any way.
It's the back and forthness
yeah.
as well, and, you know, the waiting for it, as they use the phrase all the way through, the decision maker. And it's like, but that person who's making the decision
mm-hmm.
has already made that decision. He got that letter.
Yeah, he got a letter.
But I think
yeah.
with the decision maker, they should always have a button to press to go do, do, do. It's just quite a menacing.
It is a really sort of menacing term, isn't it? It's like, yeah, the decision. But it's like this process again, it's not personable in any way, you know, and they're just following a script, and that whole thing of calling it a decision maker is yet again removing anything from them. They're just, you know, automatons following
yeah,
a script, and it's someone over there behind closed doors that you'll never see or hear unless they make a decision.
And again, has that separation,
yeah. Yeah.
That they don't know your story, so the
yeah.
decision maker can't take your side of things
mm-hmm.
because you never get to plead to them. It's
yeah,
just boxes.
Yeah. It's just whatever's ticked in a box or written on a form or
yeah, and
whatever.
The job,
yeah.
And the job centre staff are encouraged to put you on sanctions.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that the government claim that they don't, but there's been plenty of job centre staff have come along and said that they're given massive incentives to.
I mean, one last point I want to touch on is some of the predictability of the movie, in a way.
Yeah.
I found there was a few bits that I saw coming and were predictable. Now, during the movie, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I can see this is gonna, but then when I've got to the end, I'm thinking, is that actually because I really, you know, I know that this sort of stuff happens in real life, and therefore that's why I was predicting it. It's like,
yeah.
you know, this is the reality of things. I mean, the whole prostitution subplot, right?
Yeah.
I saw that coming a mile off, and when it was like happening, I'm like, oh my god, no, because it felt cliche like while it was happening.
Yeah.
But then afterwards I'm thinking, well, no, of course it's cliche because it happens all the time, and that's what women are subjected to, and that's the way out that they feel like they've got.
Well, yeah, if you're yeah. a woman and you need to make money quickly,
yeah,
it's a relatively easy way to make money, isn't it?
Well, it's not necessarily easy. It's a quick way. To,
yes,
mm-hmm.
That's why I hesitate with the
money.
Easy, because obviously
yeah.
it's
yeah.
a horrendous thing to do.
Yeah.
But no, it's yeah, that whole plot section did feel cliche, but as you say, is that the cliche because that's what happens,
mm-hmm.
or was it just predictable and that was the easy way for the writers to kind of add that section in without going into, you know, complicated detail?
Yeah, and I think that's it. By the end, it hadn't delved too deeply, and I think it had done enough to put that plot in there and for good reason, you know. I think it did work by the end. And then I think the other thing that I was feeling was coming all the way through the movie was obviously Daniel's death. I felt that was
spoiler alert.
Okay, I think, I mean, you know, if you've not listened to this show before, you know that right from the outset, we just, you know, we talk about the movie that we've just watched, and hopefully you've just watched before listening to this. So if you haven't, well, never mind. But yeah, I was waiting for that to happen all the way through.
Yeah.
Well, not all the way through, but I think, you know, once it got into it, I'm thinking this is where it's ultimately going to end up. But even when it did, it was still hit in a sort of, you know, really harsh way. And then it did the thing that most other movies don't do, and it didn't linger on any of that point. So it was like he died, we got a little bit at the funeral, which was really just to read out his appeal, and then the movie ends.
Yeah,
you know, and that's it.
And it's very striking words for that appeal. That's
and the music comes in, so, you know, there's a good gap where everybody's just sat there in silence after the movie finishes,
mm-hmm.
in complete silence till the music comes in very gently.
Yeah,
it's perfectly done.
I think that was one of the things throughout the movie. Actually, I didn't notice a lot of score, a lot of music at all, you know, which again probably made it feel even more that documentary, just, you know, shot with somebody following these people around kind of movie. Yeah,
and obviously this system of sanctions costs more money than it saves, so we are basically paying for these people to be trapped like that.
So what does that prolong them on the benefit system, or
there's quite a few statistics about it on online, and the sort of administrating it, and then the amount of the get appeals and stuff like that costs more. It's a fascinating subject to go and have a read about.
I guess that's the key point for this. You know, if you've watched the movie and if you've listened to us, you know, ramble for 20 minutes or so, is go off and read about some of this stuff.
There's a lot of different research stats this as well, because like anything with bloody stats.
You know, don't just take the word of Mr. CV class and believe that everything, you know, you read is a fact. You know, get out there and read a few different sources and figure it out.
Make your own opinion.
See what, form an opinion about it. But it's quite an interesting, hopefully, that it does provoke some thoughts and make you think.
I pulled away from the film was he sold his stuff. He sold his carpet. I didn't realise he could still sell your carpet because it's fitted to your house.
He sold absolutely everything.
Who buys carpet?
He kept his tools so he could work again, and, you know, the mobile fish. Yeah.
But who buys used carpet for a house that isn't the size for yours? You know,
people
old carpet. Mm-hmm.
People will buy that. That's
Well, you can get rag money for it.
So, I mean, is that the other side of the coin? Is somebody's that, you know, they've got that little money, but they need the carpet. They're quite happy to take, you know, an offcut that doesn't quite fit their room and has been well used. I mean, I'd see that as a bit of an outsider of something a bit weird and a bit daft. But in the same way, that might be quite obvious to somebody as well. I need carpet for my house. Let's go to the rag and bone man.
Yeah. But I guess that's it. There's a market.
It's a different world.
Yeah. Oh, so there we go. So, any closing thoughts that you want to add, or give your kind of final opinion of the movie, Phil?
Fuck the government and donate something towards food banks.
There we go. All right. So.
That was the film. I mean, there's not a lot to add to it, really. You watch it.
I've seen it before. Good people on the street. You could lose everything.
Well, I'm not going to give up. When you lose your self-respect, you're done for.
Yeah! Do you want to tell people where they can kind of find the Formal Shark brand, etc. online?
Yeah. www.formalshark.co.uk with our brand new website, all shiny and new. I haven't even put a dint in it yet.
You can email us, sharks@formalshark.co.uk, and we'll forward on the emails to the correct people.
You can go on at Formal Shark, but that's mainly beer.
Yeah, I'm sure if we want a Twitter on films, then Lord Phil can make one up.
I'm sure we could probably start something like that. And you know, and if you're kind of sick of just hearing us, you can maybe watch us. There's a few YouTube videos up that are linked from the site. And if you like some of that and you want to see more of it, the Formal Shark team are actually running a campaign right now as well to raise some money to produce a feature-length movie, so please give that a look on our crowdfunding link on the website.
That's www.formalshark.co.uk.
Exactly.
See, twice in case they didn't get it written down. Or go to Google and type Formal Shark.
And if the second title listening to us, I'd suggest watching the YouTube on mute.
Maybe that. Yeah, that's a good idea. If you just like to watch beer being poured into a glass, why not tune in?
Exactly.
But otherwise, we'll be back next month for another movie review and a movie listen. So join us next time on Let's Watch with Formal Shark.